Hello.
Hey, Olivia.
How are you, Spencer?
I'm
Since
good.
we
How are you?
good. Yes, I love it. The guitar in the back,
I
the
definitely
whole
didn't set it on intentionally. It's not
life directing. Love that. I
it's
think we'll be here shortly, but
okay. It's great to meet you in person. I've been doing a lot of reading about you for the past 2 hours, so
oh man, he's done his research. This is exciting. I'm like, ooh, what's on there?
Yeah. Not as much research as I usually like to, but that's okay. That's my fault. I'm so bad at checking my email, so
Oh, you think I'm good at it? Yeah. Like someone told me to check my email, and that's why I checked it.
it's so hard. I mean, and you have to keep up with social medias and everything too. It's just
Like,
like
I'm gonna be honest with you, it's for the birds. That's just,
yeah.
but it's more so I think I have had to stop. I remember when I first got a smartphone and I was in college and I was like, I thought it was cool. And then I was like, oh no, like I get emails everywhere. I don't want this. Like, I don't want people to reach me this often. This sucks.
Yeah.
And then I remember like one day I like lost my phone for like a day and a half. And I was like, I don't want. And then I think when I got my phone back, I think I turned off emails because I was, but it was crazy because people have this feeling like you're beholden to them. Like, how
Right.
do you not reach out to me? How do you do da 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 da? And I'm like, so
Yeah.
I engage, but I try to pick my battles.
Yeah. I think our website says and under the phone number, it says like email, and then it says phone number. It says 1-800 use our socials. It's just yeah, it's
Okay.
a there's a there's two debt generations that I have to work with, and you can kind of usually tell which one it is based on the correspondence. But
True, true. I'm an old millennial, so old millennials are over it.
yeah, I'm on the I'm a young millennial by like 2 months, so I made the cutoff, but but yeah, emails, I know how to use it, but yeah.
Well, I don't know. They're both pretty bad. Because the problem with emails is like, and I have to curate my emails, you know what I mean? Because you join a mailing list you thought was cool, and then you're on it and you're like, this is stupid and I hate it. And it's like every now and then it sounds useful. So you're like, should I? And you're like, I shouldn't. This is stupid. Like,
And
I'm never gonna use this.
I'm assuming you guys are independently produced, just because the music industry is terrible.
What's new?
And that's just like, I don't know, it's a full-time job. I mean, there's a reason that there is a music industry, is because it's a full-time job to stay up on that stuff, so.
Well, that's why you either have to decide that you're going to do it to that level of frequency, or you have to space everything out in a way that it's workable. And I think, it's a big question that I ask and my friends and I talk about a lot, which is like sustainability. Because at the end of the day, it is not my dream to be a label runner. I don't care about music labels. Like, I like making art and I like eating. So those two things just have to happen. Like, that's how that works for me. So I'm like, okay, well, which of these things will help me do both? Like, I can make the art, share it with the people I want to share it with, and also eat. And I love, I'm all about having both of those things be possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, it's about sustainable art. It's about, putting yourself in a good position to be able to do the work you really like. And then thank God I really like doing art. Like, it's not like I like people, want me to sing background and jingles. I love doing that. I
Yeah.
just love everything associated with that.
And well,
And
your voice is you're sort of I've read that your voice is sort of plastered all over New York, right? You're in the subways and everything.
I mean, you can hear me all. Yeah, I mean, now not so much, but oh, he's in the waiting room, he says.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't
We're
know
having
why I
a nice
added a waiting room. I think
day.
you were in there for a while too, and I forgot to add you.
I was in the waiting room. Hey, Jess.
Hey.
What's up, y'all?
Great to meet you.
Great to meet you, Spencer. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm all right. It was a crazy day, but I'm so glad we could get some time to just sit down and talk.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just now looking at my camera and I realize that like my room looks like it's pink. And I don't
Oh.
know why that is, but we're gonna roll with it.
Look, it's
No.
vibey, vibey,
It's
I
like
mean.
a matte pink, so it's,
Yeah, it's
not a hot
it
pink.
looks
It's
like I'm having a party in here a little bit, but
aesthetic. It's an aesthetic.
we don't know what you do in your personal life, like
Maybe you
we
run a
don't judge.
beauty.
Speaking of which, that's the theme of this band. Anyway.
Well, I appreciate you both taking the time today to meet with me. I just listened to the single today for the first time. And it's like, I love that style and everything that you guys kind of stand for as a group. So this is honestly for me, I like really love that I get to write about you and meet with you and learn a little bit more. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was hoping to start just because I really just heard about you guys today. If you could just give me like the spark notes about who you are. And you know, where you started with music and, you know, what's your favorite party trick or something? I don't know.
Cool. So I feel like there are a bunch of different ways we can tell this story, Liv. I like literally like am the author of like the latest like version of like the two paragraph like summary. I could do that, or we could. What do you want to do, Liv? You
want to? I want to start.
Because I feel like it starts with you, and then I kind of come in.
Well, I'm Olivia AK, right? So there's that. The K is not my last name; it's my middle name, which folks often assume my name's Olivia King. Like I get that all the time. It is not, which is fine. And the Cliff Notes version of this is Olivia King. The Parkers is a band that has now existed for almost 6 years and has had different iterations. It's always been based in New York. I was always Olivia Gay, and there were always people who were the Parkers, but we've changed a lot. It started out as friends from college. We were like kind of, you know, we were just making music for fun, and then we're like, let's just play around the city, and we started writing together. But the version of the story that's most important now is actually the story of essentially me as a songwriter having like a you know, a lot of things, but actually meeting Jesse, who was playing a gig of our mutual friend. He was the pianist for our mutual friend. And I think it's really a story about finding your people, like the right people for you, who you really are, and not necessarily from based on looks, but like literally just seeking out the vibe. And so essentially what happened was I went to this residency event they had, and I was like I was just doing a favor to a friend. I was like, I'm gonna go. And it was like a speakeasy, brothel-y kind of vibe. I look and it's like my friend's on guitar and Jesse's on piano, and I'm looking and Jesse's just bopping. Okay. Like, this is the best I can describe. He's just like bopping, just grooving, like really into it. And I'm like, I don't really know the songs. They're kind of R&B-ish. They're kind of like.
Some of them were original. Some of them were like straight up, like, you know, we did like dub arrangements of like, you know, One Dance by Drake. Like,
right.
Like
that. But awesome. It was a mix. And so like, but he was like so into it. Like he was so alive and passionate about it. And like, and just bopping along and talented, like the playing was great. You know, that's important too. And then right, he's an amazing. And so I'm just like kind of listening and vibing. I'm like, oh, this is unexpected because I had this band, but I had no keyboard player at the time. And I was like, I feel like this is the vibe. Yeah.
So so essentially, like, from my perspective of what happened that night, she was just like the most active like person in the crowd who was just dancing, and I was like, the first thing that occurred to me is like, all right, she's really into it and she's giving me energy that I need right now. And the second was just like, she totally knows somebody in this band. I was just like,
I knew two people in the band that day. Actually.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. She totally like. It's like I just without even her opening her beautiful mouth and letting song come out of it, I was like, she plays something. I think she sings. I'm not sure. I think she sings. And we just ended up talking on the set break, and we kind of made all the connections, the 6 degrees of separation, and how we kind of have just missed each other up until that point at several different points. And immediately our energy, which is, I'd like to think for both of us, it's very individualistic and very personal. It just was such a match in terms of just how we spoke to each other and how we were around each other. We were immediately making each other laugh. And I think that night we got on the same train and went home, and we ended up singing the same song in Portuguese by Jorge Benjor, Uma Para Uma, which is off of his song, off of his album Africa Brasil, which is like an album that both of us, like, you know, being kids from New York, we love that album. We both come from multilingual, multicultural families. And so I kind of grew up speaking Spanish and Portuguese and having nobody around me give a crap about Brazilian music, and much less like Brazilian MPB, Música Popular Brasileira. You know, like, nobody really cares. And then she's like singing this Jorge Benjor song that I like grew up with, and like, I know all the lyrics and I love it. And we're singing together on the train.
Yeah.
And she had to leave on a certain stop and I had to go on a certain stop. So we kind of parted ways, but we like, earlier in that night, we joked about how, like, when a telemarketer calls you, there's always like 3 seconds before hello. And so the first thing like that I get in the morning is a voicemail from her going, hi, this is Olivia, your Google specialist. Like, it was just like that. And I was laughing my ass off. And then eventually she brought me on for a gig, and like, the gig went well, and I kind of, I have, you know, like, I have big band leader energy whenever I walk into a rehearsal. And I was just kind of like, you know, maybe we should do it this way. Cause like, she gave me all of her songs and I take gigs seriously. So I was like, all right, I'm going to learn all the songs. I came in, I knew the songs, I knew the lyrics, I knew what I was going to do. And then I just kind of realized like, okay, these are really good songs, and the band needs to kind of be whipped into shape a bit. So I kind of very politely was kind of like, well, why don't we do this and that, yeah, the first time.
It was the best of possible world. Like, yeah, it was the best of like two people who like agreed on a vibe, like enjoying life, like having fun, and like also making good art, but then also feeling like we, the two of us, had a really a perfect kind of match for what was needed. Right. Like,
yeah.
I at the time was the person who was just like really doing like just being myself and the personality and the heart of the thing. But it's also like, you know, like the heart, you can't live with just the heart. You have to have hands and feet and do all that stuff. And he's really like the organizational genius. And so because of this and this like whole relationship, we've been able to this friendship has been able to like kind of get us both through a really hard time as artists. Where we were both like, you know, I think what happens to a lot of indie artists, right? Which is like, you spend all this time, like maybe you make one big project and you're so proud of it and it's so great, and you like tell everyone you know, and then you realize that's only 1,000 listens on Spotify. And you're like,
if that,
right.
I count myself among the guilty who did a big project and
that's had, what I'm saying. Like,
absolutely tanked. Great. Absolutely tanked.
And but it was an amazing project. And I could say the same thing for my own previous project. It was like, it was a great project, but you know, that's not it. That's not all it takes to hit the market, yeah, in a major way. But at the same time, you can get so discouraged by that you forget what you're really doing it for and what the love is all about. And yeah, so that, like, so Jesse, like, really as a friend, like, fought for me as an artist to like reclaim my voice and to reclaim my, like, what I wanted to really say and do, which was I really wanted to make people feel joy and like be like, just like, you know, vulnerable and real, but also like joyful and excited and like caring about what's going on in the world. And so I think it's really like a situation where, you know, even the, you know, people say, check on your strong friend. Like, we are each other's strong friend. Like, we are the, you know, we are the, and we built a team and a family of people in our band who are the same way, where they're not only are they incredibly talented, they're just incredibly amazing hearted people. And that's what this band is about. It's just, it's a substance and it's technical stuff. You know, like, it's not, yeah, just, oh wow, they're so great and I hate them.
We strive, as much as I love Steely Dan, we strive to be like not that part. Like, I love Steely Dan. Steely Dan's amazing, but I get more flack for loving Steely Dan than almost any other band that I really, really passionately like. And like, yeah, we're much, and I think it's because they're sardonic and they clearly are dicks. Yeah. But that's not us.
It's not like, that's never our intention. I'm sure there have been times where, you know, whatever, we're human, but we're super into being the best musicians, artists, and people. and then like really supporting our audiences to feel the exact same way.
Yeah. Well, that's beautiful. That's honestly such a beautiful story for you too. Like,
it's a really crazy story. Everybody, like, I mean, we are truly kind of like the most platonic married couple you've ever seen.
I know. I feel like I listened to a rom-com. Like,
it's really bizarre.
It really was that kind of vibe.
It really was kind of like, it's like, this could go one of several ways. And we just, I think we both in that moment decided, music duo, like, go.
Well, it's so important because that's something I learned also as an artist was like, I used to mix business with pleasure. And I was like, this is not it. So I made a very specific rule at that point in my life. I was like, I can't, like, I'm not going to do that. If I'm really serious about this and I'm serious about this and I want to treat those people fairly and not like, you know, have it be very confusing for people.
Yeah, so. But in a weird way, even through that as like the context through which we work together, I mean, there is no lack of love and affection between the two of us. Like it's just, you know, it's, we kind of, you know, we've set the terms of it and, but there's a lot of passion for one another that I think we have. And I think it comes out in how we work, you know, and at least from my perspective, it was so easy for me to kind of really be Liv's champion when I think she felt like she didn't really have one, because I just walked in and I just said, I looked at it on paper and I said, these songs are great. They're not only like interesting harmonically, they're interesting, they're great melodically. A lot of them are really singable. She's really good. She is a natural earworm writer. And just the lyrics and the perspective is so direct and very, very simple in a very profound way that is very hard to get at. Liv is preternaturally talented in the sense that she can really get at the boiled down, you know, nugget of human emotion that regardless of your politics, regardless of where you come from, you can really connect with her. And which is, you know, quite a feat, I think, from coming from anybody. But I mean, like, so for me to kind of stumble across her and her music and say like, why isn't she like enormous yet? Like what's going on? And I get to be the one who like gets to basically take like this beautiful blueprint of a song and I get to be the one who arranges it and like changes it up and kind of puts my spin on it. And I was like, where do I sign? like totally would do it. I would do it for free. But like, you know,
but then you paid me
for the first couple of gigs. And then on the third gig, you were like, do you want to just like do this with me? And I was like, yeah, I'll do it.
That's how we made your daughter the song.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah, so that's the story. And in terms of a party trick, Olivia has a laugh that you can get her to do. I don't know if she can do it on command, but she does have a laugh that sounds like Nigel Thornberry. And I think it's so funny. We have another single coming up later that she was doing one of the vocal overdubs, and I got her to laugh about some stupid like Brazilian meme or something that we both are in on, and she just like, she did the Nigel Thornberry laugh, and I was like, I'm putting that in the track. I don't give a crap. Like, and so that's one of Liv's tricks. What's one of mine?
Jesse's party trick. I feel like, I actually think Jesse is really good at just knowing like deep movie quotes, deep SpongeBob quotes. Like, and deep I'm SpongeBob. Like deep SpongeBob quotes. And I'm like, I vaguely remember this happening. And he's like word for word back and forth in it. I'm like,
oh. Sounds like a lot of hoopla for just a little Krabby Patty, right? Wrong.
Right, exactly.
You know, so yeah.
You have the voice too.
I would probably, if I were to answer for myself, I think my skill is like doing voices and like putting on different characters. I can do that really well. I've always been able to do that.
That's amazing. Well, awesome. You guys are excellent at answering questions. I feel like I have like a million questions lined up for all my interviews, and I get through all of them. And so I always try to be wicked over prepared, but you guys are, I love talking to you because you're so good at this.
Thank you. Well, hopefully, like, I think for us, like, because we've been trying to like really figure out in the past year during the pandemic, it's like, okay, what are we really doing? What is the real image message of this band? And I think we decided after talking about it, really not for very long, because it just the answer felt right. It's just like, it should just be built around what it's like to hang out with the two of us when we're talking, because we think we're hilarious. The friends who are around us think we're hilarious together. And it just like, that's like, we want to engender that as like the first thing that people feel when they listen to us. And then we just use that as, you know, the energy to kind of get them to feel and think the things we want to communicate through what we're making, you know?
Yeah.
But the first thing is just like, we have somehow, like, we're two halves of a charisma bomb, and it's it just goes off every time we're in the room together.
Oh, that's great.
Word.
Well, I wanted to ask about the Sankofa project a little bit. And I was just wondering if you could, you know, it's called a meditative act of creation and closure. And I'm wondering if you can dive into that for me a little bit, explain how, I know you guys like blasted through your goal. So explain that experience for me, and what was the goal, and
Okay. So, well, Sankofa came from like, first of all, Sankofa is it's a Ghanaian word. It's a Twi word. Twi is the language. One of the languages spoken in Sankofa.
No.
When I was a child, I watched a movie called Sankofa, which was about a woman who like time travels and like goes back to her roots, as she was like an African American living in like New York or something, and she like time travels and like is like has to experience like living in Africa and then becoming a slave and like all these crazy things, or like the like that process. And so I've known about this for years as like growing up, but it basically means, it literally means go back and get it. And it's a, it, what's interesting is it's both a phrase, and then there's also a bird that like represents the phrase. And it's like a bird that has its head turned like that, like it's kind of turning back to get something. And so, you know, for me, what that was about, and this is really important to me in general, is that music and art and culture are designed to connect generations and connect worlds. And I personally have always felt, so my family's from the Caribbean, and I always felt, and my dad, my mom's side Caribbean, my dad's from America, but I always felt like there was a real need for, like, America really needs this intergenerational conversation, because I grew up like in Caribbean culture, like there's a very strong like connection. Like you might talk to your great aunt, and you might talk to your, you know, your stepmother's cousin, brother, baby, somebody, you know what I mean? So like, it's a very, you know, I grew up like where most of the people I knew, and I grew up in Brooklyn, most of the people I knew growing up here, we lived with multiple family members, like different age levels, different things. And so you learn in that context how to be a person in a totally different way. Because you're not just a millennial. I'm not just a millennial. You know, I'm not just a whatever. I am a part of the fabric of all human people. And so, you know, like I find it very strange that people don't party together of different age groups. Like I grew up, that's how I grew up. It was like you go to a party and everybody in your family was there. So there were kids running around in the background and sometimes sleeping under the table. And then you would have like, you know, certain like, you know, the teenagers would always be like trying to get into something. And the college age students would be just drinking and like being like, yeah, whatever, you know. And then the older folks would be doing this. But you would get together and you just kind of share. And so it's super important to me that this ancestral connection of all of our ancestors, all of us, those who came before us, is brought into today so that people understand and feel the real, I don't know, feel grounded. It grounds you to know, you know, who was your great-great-grandfather. It grounds you to hear the rhythms of that music. It grounds you to know things about yourself because it gives you some fabric to work with. Do you know what I mean? Like it gives you something to work with to create your own self. So, you know, that's for me where the original, like, why Sankofa as a concept in general.
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful.
So, like, to add to this, right, because there's a bit of a, it seemed when we came up with it, when we arrived at it, rather, like, it just seemed like the perfect way of summarizing what I think, you know, the themes that, you know, Olivia just kind of listed down that we talk about and we deal with in our music and in just our communities of musicians who we work with. But to add to this, it's kind of a symbolic layer cake, because in addition to everything that Olivia just said about wanting to feel connected to the past, to figure out how to organize and proceed in your present, you know, it's as much about that as the actual songs that we ended up recording as part of the Sankofa project, that's what the crowdfunder was. It was crowdfunded to get us into the studio to record all of Olivia's catalog that she had been regularly performing for years, but had yet to record in a way that was satisfactory. So, you know, and I said, on a very personal level, we kind of had been playing these songs. She'd been playing with Olivia Kay and the Parkers and playing these songs since before I got there. But when I got there, we ended up completely rearranging them, kind of really bringing them to their full-bodied form, you know, their final form, as it were. Over the course of the year where I really kind of helped take the reins. And then I said to her at a certain point, okay, like, we've done a bunch of these gigs. We feel really strong as an ensemble. We like know these songs from back to front. We have to record this. And I said specifically to her, like, you have to record this, because there's something in these songs that you have to like both transcend and let go of and finalize and go through the whole process of creation and like the grieving that goes along with that in order to get out of this rut that we have both felt ourselves in, which is, I think, is part of why we are able to communicate so well. It's like we both have felt that kind of that sense of being caught in some kind of creative quicksand where we're, for whatever reason, for whatever emotional reason, something we're trying to work out, like something was preventing us from letting these creations go and letting them assume a recorded form, sending them out, and really giving ourselves permission to move on and move forward with that in mind. And so in a sense, like, the material is just as oddly, you know, resonant of like the Sankofa symbol as all the themes that we're trying to talk about in the music itself. Like, it's where life kind of intersects with art in that really, really powerful way.
Wow, that's awesome. I love that, and I love that you guys shattered your goal for fun.
Yeah, that was so cool. That part was fucking awesome. I'm not gonna lie.
You know, as I know as independent musicians too, like, money's always a topic. And you're like, how are we gonna fund? How are we gonna do what we want to do? And it comes down to things like, you know, crowdsourcing and funding. And you know, I can just only imagine you guys must have been so excited to have that and to be given the creative liberty to go forward and pursue that project.
I think so. And I got to hand it to Liv, because, you know, I'm, in case you can't totally figure that out at this point, I mean, I'm kind of the cerebral sort of nervous one, where I'm the one who's just kind of looking at the stats and going, I don't know how we're going to pull this off. Like, we're going to do it. We're going to try. We're going to do everything we can. It's like, I don't know how I'm going to pull this off. And then the genius of Liv was like her fundamental insight about that whole part of the process of making this project was, she just always said, it's like, there's money everywhere. She just and she's right, and she was totally right. And there's something about Liv's way of being where she can just kind of cut the quick of something and just be very calm. And she's like, look, like, you know, we've built the infrastructure, we have built it, it will come, there's money everywhere, somehow it will happen. And lo and behold, it did. And it happened.
And to be fair, like, I think I would be remiss in mentioning a couple of things. Like, first of all, we had an amazing, like, nothing, like, we're not just genius, like, we're very smart and very talented people, but we also, like, are very good at getting genius people to work with us.
And oh my God, we've had so many people who we've brought as part of our team.
Our friend Jolie basically spearheaded this fundraiser with us, because one of the things that kind of happens sometimes as an artist is, like, you can have this experience where you just stop being in reality about it. You're like, I don't know if I'm making any money. I don't know. You stop being able to really put it in perspective, and you stop feeling like, you know, a big part of asking for money is being able to be comfortable with just making a request and saying, I think I'm worth it. I think my work is worth it. I think you want to do this, whatever. And to say that to those people, like, and be really like it's just simple to you without all this other, like, trying to prove it or trying to over, but just like really simply requesting that and then having the faith in the community that they know they've seen us for 5 years. Like, they've seen me like pounding the damn pavement of New York City for 5 years of making great work and not being able to give it to them. You know, if, in many ways, it's, people wanted to get the work to themselves. They're like, okay, like,
we everybody benefited. It was like, it was truly one of those, like everybody, like all the people who donated were people who were fans of us or Olivia or friends of ours in the community who wanted to support us. And we're both very much involved and intertwined with it. And we couldn't have gotten it done without the help of the New York music community and with people who were brilliant at marketing, like Joe. You know, but
just getting to share the story in a way. And then the other thing was the fundraiser happened in like January of 2020. It was like end of December into like January
of 2020.
And that year before 2019, my house had been in a fire, right? Where I was like, I didn't have a place to live for about 5 months. So I like everything that could possibly happen, like happened right in the past, like 2 years. Sure. And because of that, I was forced to ask for help from the community. And we were able to raise $16,000. And like people that I didn't expect were just coming out of the woodwork. My boss was like, we're hosting a charity event for you and all these things. And so that really difficult experience, that was super painful. And like, for a lot of people be like, oh my God, how are you still doing things? Mm-hmm. But it gave me such an awareness, like a new awareness of what's possible when you really share yourself vulnerably with people. And when you really let them know what you need and you've been good to people, if you're good to people, people want to be good to you. And that's both of us, I think, are people who make it our business to be good to others, especially those people we work with, but just people in our lives. And it's, you know, people say good karma, but it's really like, I've always given what I can and been generous with my life because I care about people. And so if you care about them, they get it. It's authentic. And then they give it back. Like, you know, and someone messaged me, I remember when we like were raising it, and someone sent me a message like, how did you do it? And I'm like, what is this question? Like, have to build a community. Yeah. You have to do, like, you have, you, there's, there are something, things, yeah, to do.
There's a way, I think, like, one thing that Liv and I share in common is that we're both real empaths, sometimes to the point where it hurts. It's really, really hard. And I think that neither of us is a stranger to pain or tragedy. And I think for both of us, we've made the choice to lean in to really connecting with people and caring about people and being kind and being generous to people, even when it doesn't seem to always make sense. And I think that, I mean, I'm not, you know, I mean, I, you know, I'm less of a believer than Liv is. I'm a secular, like, you know, New York Jew, but I do think of it as a kind of act of profound faith to lean into like what I believe to be human nature to be good at its core. And that's what I'm always trying to speak to and what I'm always trying to serve when I'm interacting with other people. And yeah. I think that, you know, even just a little tiny miracle like us surpassing our fundraising goal is a demonstration of that to me, you know, that there's something that can be spoken to in all of us. And that if you tend to it and that you care for it in others, you will reap the benefits later on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just got a notification that I don't have a full Zoom license, so it might kick us off. If that happens, I'll just shoot you guys another Zoom link. We can hop back on. Okay. We'll do it that way. Sorry about that. I'm trying my hardest not to pay Zoom.
That's all good. Well, but what else can we tell you?
On that topic of, you know, like, if you're good to people, they will be good to you in return. I think that directly leads into the single that you guys are about to release, Good Things. So I wanted to ask, you know, you've been doing this song for a while, and it's part of this project where you're going back and it's been worked on and you're producing it. What does that mean to you to see this work come alive? And, you know, this is sort of the kickoff of that project, you know, in the public eye, at least. So, you know, You excited? Are you nervous?
I'm getting teary. I'm like getting really teary, and I didn't expect to. But, you know, this song has been living with me for 5 years, personally, and it came from a real love space. Like, I really loved someone who, like, really just did not think. They were like, you know, well, you know, I can't have nice, like, I you know, if bad things happen to me, if people do bad things to me, like, that's what I deserve. It was kind of like this crazy, and I was like, that's crazy to me. Like, I couldn't wrap my head around that. And this song came from such a genuine love place, and a real, like, you know, like when you really love someone, you want what's best for them, whether you're involved or not. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so not about you at all. It's just about what's best for them. And so, because of that song, you know, it started out being about a particular person, but then it kind of, every time that we perform it, it grows. I've had people come up to me.
It is truly like, it's like you're going to church with the whole audience. Whenever we play that song, there is something that like reverberates in that audience. I have seen people cry. I have seen people like shout the lyrics to a song that they just learned. I have seen people just, you know, like hug each other and kiss each other in the audience. Like, there is something, there's this bizarre, eerie kind of calm and serenity that happens. I swear to God, like, next time we play a show, like, come yourself and see it. It is foolproof. It is so crazy.
Yeah, well, I love that.
Part of it is I grew up in church, right? My grandma was a minister. And so, you know, one of the things you do in church is you often tell people, like, look at your neighbor and sing or say something or sing something. And it's very powerful. It's like very affirming to see someone mirror something to you. So now you kind of can hear that we do it in the recording where we kind of, you know, we tell people to sing along even though they can't see us. And I think that's brave of us, because
that was a move. The funny thing was, it's just like, because we tried to record a version of it that was a bit more, let's say, polished and very indicative of, this was made in the studio, you know, with a lot of thought put into it. And it just failed to capture this, like, because all of the other songs that we play, we kind of had a studio version of it that we kind of had in mind going in. But with Good Things, it was actually so hard. Because I just kind of kept saying to myself, like, no, no, no. Like, every single time you try to, like, dress it up or you try to finagle it or refine it in any way, you actually lose the immediacy of its power. And so what you're hearing is actually us just saying, we are going to go into the studio, the whole band, we are going to record this live, and que será, será. Like, we're just going to let the spirit take us. And that is what people are going to hear. So we treated it exactly the way we would treat it live. And that was a very conscious decision. And it, every single time, again, like, my super neurotic arranger brain, it's like I kept trying to find an avenue where I could make it different or make it better. I couldn't. And I think that's because it couldn't be.
Yeah.
You know?
Some things are best simple. Some things are best, like,
raw.
Yeah, and that's the I'm just like, I cannot, I'm excited. I keep talking about it. It makes it easier to do my job, the other job of marketing and sharing, right? Like, because there's the I made the art, and then there's the I'm sharing the art. What I love is that people have requested this song to me, like, hey, I want to send this to my friend.
Yeah,
I've had the sound engineer at this one gig I had, like, oh my God, this crazy gig I had where nobody got paid and it was crazy. But the sound engineer came up and was like, tears in her eyes. She's like, I needed that. So to me, like, this song, more than any of the songs that we have right now, is like a service to people. It's a gift that I get to give people. It's a gift that we get to give to people. And, like, it was so, like, every person, all the personnel, everyone on the record had that love. Like, we had been in the studio with each other for days.
And yeah, this was one of our last things that we recorded.
It was, like, the last recording.
Late at night. And for what, I mean, like, you know, 3 days in the studio, no matter who you are, you're tired, you know, and then somehow when we all just, like, got to playing it, it was like first take out of the gate, just bam. The spirit just takes you with that song. And I think everybody was kind of like in a place where it just feels like a mercy when you're playing that song. you know, because you're when I'm playing it, I'm almost like hearing it sung to myself, you know, and I think that that everybody else in the band feels that way too.
Yeah,
it really is. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I think Olivia, at the end, I think you actually say goodnight.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was wondering about that. For a second I was like, was that a live performance or?
Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah, it was live. The entire track is live.
Man, that's I've been in that situation before. So that was take one that you went with.
Yeah, pretty much take one.
Congrats.
Thank you.
And we'll have a music video soon. We're not dropping the video at the same time, but maybe we'll circle back around to it at that point because we're working on it. Was a live. We shot live while we were doing everything.
Okay. Yeah, we had it filmed as we played. So just to prove to people, it's like we actually did this. You know.
Yeah, but we're editing a little bit with it. Like we want to do a little more, like putting the lyrics and making it beautiful. Like, and that's super important too. Is that for our aesthetic? Is that everything has to be excellent, but not neurotically perfect. Excellent, like your best, like the best that you can do in this moment, but not like we're never releasing this.
None of our records will have the production time of Chinese Democracy by Guns N' Roses.
I think that's something every group struggles with is like obviously there's things we could do that are going to make this better, but at what point do you have to step back and just say it's good, you know, and we did our best and this is good.
Right.
And as an outside perspective, I can personally tell you, I love this song and it is good. And it is excellent. So congrats.
Thank you.
Especially for take one. I don't think I've ever gotten under take six. So that's commendable.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Cool.
I know we're like less than a minute. Do we want to keep going?
Yeah, maybe this is a good spot to break. And then we can loop back. I have a few more questions. If you guys have the time for it, I'm not sure what you're
doing. Jesse might have to hop off.
I might have to hop off in like a couple minutes. Let's shoot us another Zoom link and let's get on.
Perfect. Yeah, let's do it. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit. Olivia, you've been called the designated guardian of soul, and Jesse, the bringer of madness. And I wanted to know, were those given to you? Do you agree with those titles? And where does that come from?
These are the things that Jesse gave to us. But to be fair, I do think that I've been called many things, soul sister, soul queen, like those. Soul is just a really big part of my life. And soul music, soul, like the spirit world, like all of that, those are really, really big parts of my life. So that is a big part of why. And you know, I think the role of being like a guardian of soul is also like a person whose job it is to maintain it no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like even throughout all the work that we do and all the different shows, like if we're not doing it for the soul, then there's no fucking point. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to go to a thing just so you can say, wow, her vocals, like, I don't care. Like that doesn't really do very much for me. And it definitely doesn't do very much for you. So, you know what I mean? It's super important to me to bring that energy always and to bring that intention. Yeah, that's my job. And Jesse, what do you want to say about Bringer of Madness?
Bringer of Madness.
It just it felt like about the, you know, the simplest description for the function I serve in the band. Mm. Because I think that, I mean, you know, I just felt like it was a great way to kind of, you know, allocate and just kind of make clear of like who's bringing what to the table, you know.
He brings a lot of he brings a lot of energy, and I think it's very interesting because in any partnership of any kind, but especially a creative partnership, you kind of have to figure out where the grooves are, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think what's really cool from my perspective is that Jesse is a person who always brings an immense creativity, like immense, like, oh, we could do this, or we could do this, or we could do that, or we could do this. I'm like, no, we're not doing this. Let's not
early,
do
it. Yeah, early on in like our partnership, where she was just passing me songs like, arrange this, let's figure out something to do with this. And, you know, I was just kind of like, I would come with like two or three different versions of each one, where I was like, okay, well, we can take this kind of rhythm, or we can take this and put it in a different meter, or I can do like, you know, my, like I could do my, you know, pianist composer with a music degree thing, and just be like, well, you know, Stravinsky did this, you know, in the Firebird Suite, maybe we could try this, you know, like, you know.
And so cool, because we have that language in common, because I was a music major as well, but the practical application of that, like, I used it, I was like, but I mostly want to be a songwriter, so whatever. But he like really has like an in and out knowledge of instrumentation, which is super important for a live band, you know? And, yeah. And then I kind of like bring this, like, no, there's gotta be soul in it. No, that has to be this way.
And she's very, Liv is our quality control, and very often, no, I mean, in the sense of, you know, like, she's very concerned about ultimately what full shape the music takes. Mm-hmm. I'm very much preoccupied. You know, I'm like, I've also called myself a bit of a puzzle maker. Like, I love like building tiny things and leaving little details in there for people who are like-minded to kind of to marvel at and say, oh my God, he did, he used a triple polychord. Oh, wow. You know, like, and it sounds awesome. It doesn't stick out. It doesn't sound weird. It still feels like a pop song. How the fuck did he do that? You know, like I love doing little things like that, where I'm hiding little phantom threads in the music, and I love, you know, trying to take something that is as beautiful and consonant and melodic as Liv's work unadorned, and then seeing what happens when I kind of take some sonic black magic and kind of see where they can compromise and meet in the middle. Yeah. And I think that's kind of how you get what I think of as like the sound of this band, which is really kind of like the hybridization of our two personalities. And somehow, again, like, you know, we dance a really weird tango, but it is a funky tango, and it works, and it's beautiful, and it's, you know, somehow we just keep on dancing. It's great.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, sometimes, like when I'm writing music, I'll put something in there and I'm like, you know, one day, 60 years from now, Jacob Collier is going to hop online and he's going to find this and he's going to say, oh, that's nice. And I think we all do that. And it's those little intricacies, right, that you put into the music that maybe no one will ever hear it, right?
Yeah. It's
maybe
it's
someone funny. Will, you know.
It's funny because it's like, you know, like, yeah, he's kind of, it's funny because he's now become like the standard of like, you know, like Valhalla's music nerd. Yeah. And it's just, you know, like, in a way, like, I kind of, I would love it if like somebody like Jacob Collier was just kind of like, yo, Featherstone,
yeah.
you used a really nice augmented major seventh as a dominant chord, good for you. Like that would be like, hey Jake, thanks man, you know, something. You want to like do something that's like not music related, you want to like, you know, you want to go bowling, he's like, nah bro. Nah.
I think it's...
He'll do the Drake kind of like ass, like, nah, bro. Jacob Collier, like, Jacob Collier on music. Jacob Collier on anything that's not music. Yeah. Like,
right. You know? I feel like that's part of it, too, is, like, we do create work that has substance. Because, like, you know what I mean? Because, like, that's part of why the partnership makes so much sense from my perspective, because I don't care that much about the details. Like, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I don't care. Like, and like, I write.
You're not, book. You're, you know, you care. That's not true.
I care, but it's not, I don't care the same way you
do. You don't have the desire to like be the microscopic details architect in the architect. Way that I just gravitated to from right. Like the very beginning. Like the moment I was introduced to what music theory was, I was like, oh, I get this. I totally understand this. It just felt.
Yeah,
so...
I'm more of the structural person. Like, I will create the container in which this lives. Like, I will create the tenor, the emotion, the mood.
Yeah, and everything that I choose, basically, or what we choose together, has to serve that ultimate message.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
that's the quality control.
Doesn't make sense.
That's the quality control. Does it make sense? Like, Like there was a song, we haven't worked on this song in ages, but there's a song which is not recorded that was like, what are the horns doing? You're like, no, this isn't it, but it's something, but you know, it's this. And then you have this real, but I really appreciate that because in an era where people don't really do live music anymore,
yeah,
in the ways that like rock is, I'm not going to say it's dead. Rock is underground, maybe is a better way to put it. Like, you know, those bands where they were doing so much, like, wow, look at all the things happening. Like people aren't really paying attention to that. People, you know, hip hop is not doing those kinds of things, you know. You know, there are producers, you know, in the studio doing incredible work, but it's very like them in the corner doing that. You can't imagine what it would be like to see it live. And that's super important to this band. Both of us really love the live aspect. We both come from the world of performance. Like, and like, you know, I've always been a singer, but you know, singing in church and being live, and Jesse has a background even working with ballet and stuff like that. So
I'm currently I just got out of a company rehearsal with a major New York ballet company. Like I was literally just a second ago sitting in a dressing room surrounded by tutus. So I mean, yeah. So I have like a classical background. I have a jazz background, and
yeah.
So I
I think you guys planned this because this is my next question. Is Jesse, as a student of both the classical and jazz worlds, you obviously have a good understanding of all things pertaining to music. In your opinion, which offers more to the project, and how do they contribute in their own right to the project?
You're asking which offers more to the project, like jazz or classical?
Yeah, like, which one do you feel you reach into the bag? Not that there are two different bags. I know there's crossover, but...
For me, I feel like the bag that I'm mostly like, it's funny because I have all my sacks, but I reach into them hopefully at will and with pleasure. But I feel like, you know, there's that great essay by David Byrne called "I Hate World Music" because it just kind of like reduces so many very diverse musical cultures under one label that just kind of like dilutes the whole affair. But I find myself really kind of digging through, you know, like my family's old record collection of Dominican merengue and like my dad's extensive samba LP collection, and you know, so like a lot. I mean, like you'll hear like on another song that we're gonna release later on. We structured it over a Brazilian Pachigo Alto rhythm, which is very typical of like Rio Samba. You know, so I find myself really kind of to be honest with you, like structurally, the music that I am pulling from the most is pretty much any music that is made by Black people in the Americas and that have some kind of frankly like relation to the heritage of the transatlantic slave trade. So a lot of that is Afro-Brazilian music. A lot of that is American jazz. A lot of that is American soul. A lot of it is church music. Liv brings a lot of that too. At least in terms of like the structure of like, what's the groove? What's the vibe? How are we going to communicate the words that Liv is saying? I'm always thinking structurally in terms of like African inherited rhythmic and cultural like systems. So a lot of that has to do with like Cuban music, Brazilian music, American jazz, I would say. But then in terms of like a lot of my harmony is pretty jazz based, but I'm obsessed with counterpoint. I'm a Bach nerd. I did my thesis on Bach's The Art of Fugue, where I played the whole damn thing. I don't need to get into that, but it was a fun time, and I still love The Art of Fugue to this day. So I mean, you know, like I think like I will put structural things where I'm just very obsessed with the linearity of Bach, but that's also like really compatible with like a lot of jazz and a lot of jazz linear improvisation. So that's not such a hard fit. But in terms of like orchestration and trying to think of just colors, it's like so much of it is like if it's not classical in use, where I'm like, oh, like using synths or like production techniques, it's classical kind of like in the spirit of like my favorite orchestrators like Ravel or Stravinsky or, you know, Gyorgy Ligeti. Ligeti is probably like up there in terms of my favorite contemporary composers. He died like a little over 10 years ago, but that still counts. So that's, I don't know, that's probably the best way I can answer it.
No, yeah, that's wonderful. And I know that's kind of a bad question because it's like you know, they wouldn't exist without each other in a lot of ways, you know.
Well, but, I mean, well, that's, but I think that's what draws me to Liv's music so much, because I'm so fascinated by the legacy of colonialism, in the sense that probably the one good thing that came out of it was this amazing heritage of music, where because, like, you know, I mean, European harmony, which, you know, at the time, it's its own, like, religion, European harmony. It's like, it's so kind of self-contained as a system. And for it to come across a social setting and a rhythmic culture that is so much more advanced than what pretty much any offering, you know, that the 19th or 18th centuries of European music could give them. I mean, it's just like, it's an atomic bomb of creativity. It's just so fascinating. And the fact that's one of the legacies of the worst things to ever happen in history is such a bizarre tension that it's like, and we're still obviously working through the traumas of that contemporaneously today, not just in our society, but I think globally. But there's something that's so beautiful that came out of that, and I just am, that just fascinates me about it. And it makes me feel so close to the fact that these were still, like, whatever horrible things happened and horrible things were done to people, and we still live in a society where people of color are horribly oppressed today, and yet there was something so beautiful and human about those two very distinct cultures coming together in just that tiny context, which can be such a beautiful metaphor for how we could be,
yeah,
who we could be. And that's, I think that's really kind of like the heart of that fascination for me. It's my desire to kind of like reach out to somebody who comes from such a different world from me as Liv does, and to just love her and to commune with her over something that, over a language that we both speak so intuitively and fluently.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. It is, it's poetic, yeah, in a way, you know.
As, he's good with the words, man.
Yeah. Okay, well, I have one question for Livia now. And I wanted to ask about Kera. And where that comes from, and just dive into the background of that.
Yeah, this is so wonderful to do in this moment, because my mom named me. Well, originally that was supposed to be my first name, Kera. And a few years ago, my mom and I were having a conversation, and I just like was just joking. I was just joking, and I was like, "Oh, what does it mean, like daughter of the sun or something?" And I just like randomly said that, and she's like, "No, that's exactly what it meant." And I was like, okay, that's confusing, but cool, dope. You know, because Ra in Egyptian,
it's the sun god in Egyptian mythology.
And so I have not, it's interesting because like okay, this kind of brings up something that maybe isn't super important in like just thinking about music, but is something that's kind of important to us, which is there's a lot of different forms of knowledge, and there's a lot of different levels of access to knowledge that we each have. And there are those, like, I think we do a lot with this on the internet, where it's like, you know, there are things that people say are true, and then there are like the proof, you know? And I have never found, like, my mom says she's found it in a baby book. I have never found this baby. I don't know. I have Googled, I have tried, and I've never seen this description that she's giving me. And yet, for me, I think the intention of it is so deep that it kind of sort of obliterates all the other stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it is, my mom was going to name me that. And then she met somebody who also had the same due date for her baby. And that lady wanted to name her that, and her daughter that. And my mom was like, okay. And so she named me Olivia, which I'm not sure what, like, that's very generous of her. Like, no, you may not name your daughter what I was going to name my daughter. But for me, it's like it's kind of like a reminder to, of
always shine.
Yeah, to shine. Like, and that's my, like, I shine, but also like I must shine. Like, it's important to shine. It's important for me to shine, to remind other people that they can shine. And, you know, having a sunny personality, but not to be fake, but to be just really, to be bright as you really are.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. That. Guys, I hate to say this, but I do have to get going. So, Spencer, it's been delightful talking to you. If you have, do you have another question that I can answer for you or before I get going?
Real quick, and this can just, you can answer it and hop off if you need to.
For sure.
What is the best kind of food to get in Brooklyn, and why is it jerk chicken?
Ooh! Okay, well, first of all, you got the cuisine right, but I personally think that curried goat is superior.
Okay.
But that's my personal taste. I grew up really liking gamey meat. So like even when like, you know, there's also a burrito truck in Washington Heights on 163rd Street that does this amazing basically barbecue goat burrito, and it's just like, it's the most amazing thing ever. So you get that, just the beauty of goat meat. And you curry it, and you put it over rice, and you can put it, give me some plantains. What more do you want?
Yeah, all right. That's a very acceptable answer, and thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Great meeting you. Really nice meeting you. Really nice talking to you.
Yeah, same.
And thank you so much for listening to our music. I'm so glad it made your day better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Good night. Seeing you.
Bye.
Bye.
I still need your answer on the... of the jerk chicken.
And why is it jerk chicken?
Yeah.
Truthfully, and I'm not Jamaican, right? I do love jerk chicken. And when it's, I'm gonna say one thing, which is like, I think first of all, jerk chicken is one of those things, it's like an inalienable right. You know what I mean? It's like we all deserve that. There's something
you deserve about, good things.
Right. The good things, and jerk chicken is one of them. Like it is it is on my top. I don't know, because it also depends on what you like, right? So it depends on the meat you like. Like, I love shrimp. Curry shrimp. Oh, so good. So as a Guyanese person, I almost feel like I should be like, no, jerk chicken is not it. But honestly, jerk chicken really is it. like if I had to recommend something to people that was like any old person, where you're like, oh, yeah, you're just a random person and you want to enjoy Caribbean food and you want to, but you also have to be so careful with jerk chicken because you got to get, ooh, what? Okay, anyway. Sorry. But you do have to be so careful where you get it from because people, don't be taken in, okay? Do not be taken in by these imposters. Okay. People who just throw the word jerk around, like, it's not just a seasoning, okay? Like, it is, seasoning is part of it. But if you don't jerk the chicken, do you understand? Like,
yeah,
jerking the chicken is another, like, I don't make jerk chicken. Do you know why? Because I don't jerk chicken. Like, it's that's a whole layer of, like, creation that right. is only granted to a few, okay? And, like, you gotta go to the guy who has the crazy ass, you know.
Yeah.
Grill with the chimney, like, you don't do it any other way. And if they're not doing it that way, you shouldn't eat it because it's just sauce. That's yep. just jerk sauce, and you want a jerked chicken. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm really glad I asked.
That's the caveat. That's the caveat. Chicken is great, and caveat: there are a lot of imposters out here, so don't just be running around asking for jerk chicken because they will catch you slipping. 100%.
I need to get back to my sister lives in Brooklyn. And so I get to go like once or twice a year. But I am definitely.
Where are you?
What's that?
Where are you based?
I'm in Vermont.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. I was like, once or twice a year. Like, what are you, Manhattan? Like, what's happening?
Jersey, no.
Right. Hard.
Travel. I have to go to New York. No one would come see me. But
that is true. No one's coming.
I was actually looking to move to Jersey. My sister was like, I'm not going to come visit you. Like, I'll visit you more in Vermont.
Because at least I have something to see.
Yeah. I'm going to Vermont. But yeah, funny. I would love, are you, I know quarantine has been crazy for everyone and everyone's handled it differently. Mm-hmm. And you've been doing live streams every Friday, yes. right?
Yes. I have, since the death of my mother, I kind of stopped because it was a little crazy for me to like, I've had to really recalibrate my mm-hmm. myself. Like, how do you do it, all the things you were doing? And so I have been on hiatus for a while, and especially releasing music, but I did it for 7 months, like every Friday.
Yeah.
And it used to be, I actually used to do it twice a day. The first month of quarantine, I did it twice a day. And it was of a service. It was of service because people were anxious and scared, mm-hmm. and they were so sad and desperate. And I just felt like, look, I don't have the answers to these big questions, but I have an antidote to this experience, like the anxiety part. I can definitely, you know, give you something to look at, give you something to listen to, give you, you know, something to just uplift your spirit, because this is nuts.
Yeah. It's crazy to look back at it, right? And just think like, man, that was such a dark time. Like, nobody knew what was going on or what was going to happen. And yeah, I mean, I think that's awesome that you did that, because I think everyone needed that. That's amazing.
And it's a good thing to prove to yourself sometimes. I didn't do it for that reason, but it's good to know that you can be that consistent.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, especially as an artist, we get a reputation for not being very consistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, wow, you're an artist. I know, you're all over the place. I'm like, actually, the only definition of being an artist is making art.
Yeah.
And some people are inconsistent, some people are very consistent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was very empowering for me. And I even released a song last year. I made a music video by myself in quarantine. I was just like, you know what? I'm just doing it.
Because
It was like after we recorded Sankofa, I really felt like, oh, the jail door is open. You know, like the locks are free. I'm free. I'm free to do what I need to do, like make the art I believe in and, you know, share without worrying about the strategy sometimes. You know, like strategy can be useful, but if it stops you from living your life, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Well, I don't have any further questions for you, but yeah, thank you so much. You're both incredibly radiant and vibrant and beautiful people. And I had such a great time speaking with you. And I really look forward to hearing the rest of the project and congrats on the release.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And hopefully we'll see you in Brooklyn, because that's the whole point. We're going to, you know, come back to being in person. Can't wait.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll catch a show.
All right. Sounds great.
All right. Have a wonderful night.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Trading Fours is hosted by me, Spencer Perry, and produced by Justin Healy. Special thanks to Olivia and Jesse for making this interview possible. You can listen to more by Olivia Kay and the Parkers on YouTube and support them on Bandcamp. For more exclusive content, please follow The Harp Review on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and Spotify.